Hey everyone, it's Erica from theweandme.com. Thanks for joining us on the new We and Me podcast. Today we're really excited because we have Shirley Davis with us, and we know that tons of you out there know who she is, so we're very excited that she decided to join us. For those who don't know, she has DID. She's a mental health advocate and author. So thanks for joining us today, Shirley.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yay! We're going to go ahead and just jump right in here on the episode because I wanted to talk with you a little bit about the way you explain how a system works with a therapist, how they can give and take from each other, and what kind of the goal is. Because I know that there's a lot of debate about integration, and then that's just like a high no-no word for a lot of people in the DID community, and I know you know that. You probably talk to more of them than I do. So I want you to go ahead and explain a little bit about that because I love the way you give that analogy.
Well, the big I word, you know, integration, it is a taboo word for a lot of people because people have misconstrued what it means down to the decades. You know, to some people, they're going to kill their altars and they're going to bury them and they'll never come back.
Right.
And that sounds scary, and it would be scary. Who wants to kill a part of themselves?
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, that's a lot of what providers have been taught. You know, you will have therapy with this person, and one day, magically, they will turn into one whole person, and they go happily along their way. And that just isn't the way it works. And nobody's going to die. No part of myself will ever die. They are all me. As long as I'm alive, everybody else is too.
Right.
And as long as they are alive, I will always be alive. We can never be separated.
Right. But
we're all one person, right? So, I worked with a therapist, a very good therapist, for many years, off and on. We lost each other for a few years in between the times, but worked together very hard. And she helped me to understand along the way what integration means by giving me an illustration called, I call the orchestra metaphor. All right, you have an orchestra. And there's like 40, 50 different people in this orchestra, and they're all wonderful at their instruments. They're maestros at their instruments, right? But they all play different tunes.
Right.
So when they get together, to play, it's chaos. It doesn't sound that pretty at all. It's just a mess.
Sounds like bad jazz.
Yeah. And you can imagine a trumpet blowing over there, and he's playing whatever, and you got a pianist over here playing Mozart. You know, you've got all these different instruments playing, different people with their instruments playing different music. So that is pretty much the first stage, right? The first stage of integration actually begins the first day you enter therapy, when you realize something is wrong.
Right.
Something is wrong with this picture. And your life has become chaotic, even more so. And you don't know what to do about it. And so you go to your therapist, and they sit you down, and they begin to work. And Paula helped me to understand that is when, you know, the maestro comes along. And the therapist in this story would be the maestro, the first maestro. And they get up there and they tap on the, whatever they call those, the podium, and ask people to pay attention. And she or he very slowly helps the orchestra begin to play music together. And that takes a long time because they very well used to going off on their own little tangents.
Of course, yeah.
you know, you'll have one go, you know, they'll just work together just a little bit, and then, poof, somebody goes off on their own little tangent again. And you have to pull them back in. And it takes a long, long time.
Absolutely.
But, hey, something magic happens. The orchestra plays at least a short span of time together, and they make beautiful music. And it gives them the inkling that they can do something different than what they have been doing. And that what they have been doing doesn't work, but what they could be would be wonderful and magical.
Right.
And then you're moving into the acceptance stage, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Will you accept? Yeah? Okay. I have 40, 50 altars. Maybe more. Many of us have many more.
Yeah.
Or even have less.
Yeah, that's such a varying scale. I haven't seen much consistency by way of differentiating between who will and who won't, other than systems that deal with the severe, like, cult and ritualistic abuse. Mm-hmm. Those systems I've found seem to have far more than the, I don't know, the average DID community. It's hard to put a word to that. But yes. those systems specifically seem to be, they typically seem to be in the hundreds.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate. But yeah, thank you for explaining that, because I really like that analogy, and I know that so many people in the DID community do as well. Because actually, before we met you and started talking to you more, I actually had heard that analogy from somebody before, and I asked them, where did you hear that? Because I really like that. Is that in, like, a book or something like that? And they said, I don't know, but I heard it from Shirley. And then that's actually when we that's when we found you on social media. It was just really amusing. And then every time we used that before with the Living DID talks that we do, well, because when you were a part of the course earlier this year, that was their favorite thing. That was hands down their favorite thing. They loved the way you said that. And I've heard from a few of them since the course. So it's for those who don't know, that's been a few months now, probably about 4 or 5 months. And I'm still in contact with some of them who've taken the course, and others, they're still in contact with each other. So I do hear from them. But they all still love that analogy, and they use it regularly with their colleagues as well as their patients. They explain it to them to kind of give them this goal, in a sense, that isn't frightening, that isn't triggering to some people and stuff like that. Right. They say, okay, so what we're doing is we're a band, and I right now am going to teach you to play your fiddle the best. I'm going to teach you to play guitar to the best of your abilities, and then we're going to bring it together to make an entire orchestra. And I've heard that from a couple of them.
The Beatles. The members of this group can never go away.
Exactly. They can never break up. They can't break up. There is no Yoko.
No.
But yeah, it's such a cool analogy, and I really, that one's just stuck in my brain now, because it makes so much sense. The way that it's explained, it's one of those things that is such, with DID, there's so many different intricacies and complexities that are difficult to put into words some of the time. But that is very clear and concise. Anyone can get that. Anyone can understand that. It's not frightening if you're in therapy and if you're experiencing it for the first time, or if you're experiencing it for the 20th time because you haven't been able to find a doctor yet. There really are some great ways of explaining things to your doctor, or talking to your doctor about, and saying something like, so we don't have any consistency. We're scattered all the time, whatever the case may be. I need you to help us figure out how to lead our own life. I think that is such an important thing for people with DID.
Yeah, the orchestra analogy goes even farther.
Right.
You know, okay, you got the therapist up there leading the group, and it becomes, you know, the therapist is not going to be there forever. The maestro has to leave sooner or later. He's going to retire or move on to a different city or anything, right?
Right.
God forbid they will die.
Sure.
So somebody needs to come up and be taught how to be the maestro.
Right.
So one, at least one person in the system has to be the leader. Usually it's the person who's fronting most of the time. I mean, it's a choice between the system itself, you know.
Sure.
I was chosen out of my system. And it worked out really well because I live in the today. You know, I understand the social norms. I understand there's laws.
Right.
Many of the officers forget.
Hey, man, it happens. It happens.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, I understand how to not hurt someone's feelings or, you know, I mean, there's a way of doing things, and there's a way of doing things. So I took up the baton with my therapist, and she began to teach me how to lead this motley crew.
Yep.
And again, it took time. It wasn't something that happened automatically, and that's really where the cooperation stage, the third stage, comes in.
Yeah.
You're learning how to cooperate. So with the cooperation stage, you're learning how to work together. Right. And they're learning, not only just you learning how to lead, but they're learning how to trust.
Right.
To trust that I can lead and that I will protect.
Yes.
And I will not let things happen anymore to any
right.
of my altars or myself, which is myself.
Right.
You know, I mean, of course, things can happen. You can't always protect yourself.
No.
But for the most part, I will not have anything to do with people that would harm me.
Right. Right.
And, you know, so that she's teach. I've learned trusting. I've learned to accept my altars and to love them. You know, they're the main reason I'm here still.
Yeah.
And then I'm not insane. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you know what? I got a quick question for you. I'm sorry.
Sure.
So you just said this, and it reminded me of a conversation that I had the other day. So I want to pick your brain while we're talking. So I see people use the term perpetrator a lot. Like,
uh-huh.
like a lot. The term perpetrator gets used far too much, in my opinion. Sorry to interrupt you, but... there have been a lot of different people that talk about the term perpetrator, and I'm curious what your thoughts are about that, and if you want to just chat with me about that really quick, because I don't know how accurate a term I find that. I know that psychologists use the term. I know that it's written about endlessly in some instances, and I know many, many people in the DID community use the term, but for me, it doesn't sit right in my brain. Because you're talking about these parts, so a perpetrator type part that comes to be and takes on the characteristics of an abuser. They're doing whatever it is that they're doing that is harming the system or whatever. But to me, that's still a protector. That still is there is a reason that they're doing that. I don't care if the reason is this for attention. Or another way of saying that is to take the attention off of someone else. But I just...
There you go.
That's what I think about it. Because that's one of the big things that we've seen recently in recent messages that we've gotten on Twitter. And I mean, over like the last month or so. And it's of course happened forever now. But it seems to be kicked up recently. And that people are saying... And there now, full disclosure, a couple of these people who have messaged us like... A couple, like three or four, so a few. They're more recently diagnosed, so there's this whole fear already of trying to understand what's happening to them, having a doctor finally tell them what's going on. Okay, so here it is. You have DID. We're going to work through this. We're going to talk about it. We're going to, you know, help heal through the, you know, the whole process and stuff. But one of their big hang-ups is the fear of perpetrator parts. And I just am curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, as far as perpetrator, the word term perpetrator is really a law term. You know, somebody breaks the law, they perpetrate. Right?
They are a perp. Yeah.
They break the law.
Right.
They invade in somebody else's home. They invade in somebody else's life. They've perpetrated a crime against that person.
Yes.
And there's no doubt. That sexual abuse, child abuse of any form, is breaking the law.
Right.
At least now it is. So it stays that way.
Agreed.
But as far as the perpetrator part, I agree. That is not an actual perpetrator that you're talking about.
Right.
You know, that is not an abuser.
No, that's where I get
your
stuck.
Your response to that abuser.
Yeah, that's where I get stuck on it. Because, and then some systems, they talk about how, like, well, no, my doctor told me. And I understand what your doctor said. I'm not a doctor. No,
no
part
yeah,
of me
sure.
is a doctor. That's
no.
not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that certain words have meaning. Words have meaning. They just do.
Yes, they have a lot of power.
They have a lot of power, absolutely. If you, for example, I will use myself as an example. I'm not an overly emotional person. But if someone calls me a perpetrator, a perp, an abuser, if someone uses those words under those connotations with me, because like you said, perpetrator, it's a law term. That's where it came from. So I would have to look up the origins of the word in to decipher the specifics of that. Because I just don't know that information off the top of my head. However, if you're talking in this context, no, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to instantly just choose not to like you. I'm not going to be angry. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I don't think that way. But if you call me a perpetrator, why would I want to be around you? Why would I want to talk to you? And if you're working with someone who has DID and you're trying to help their system, that includes the parts that have done damage to people, have done harm, whether it's self-harm or they're super religious, because I do have a part that by the psychological standard of the term perpetrator, she's a perpetrator. Because she took on, now she's the mother figure within my system, but by the definition psychologists use, she's a perpetrator. She has done severe damage to some of my system because of her beliefs and because of the degree to which she utilizes them, to which she prays, the way that she speaks, the things that she believes under her beliefs and the way she puts that upon my system, she's a perpetrator. And when I put it like that, psychologists seem to be like, oh my God, I didn't think about it like that. Right. But that's part of the problem. So I'm just, I just get stuck.
Don't you think a lot of it is to the therapists who, a lot of them aren't trained. I mean, there's not a whole lot of training out there, as you and I very well know.
Right. Well, that's what we both
do. Can you hear me okay? Because you keep busying out.
Yeah, no. I'm anyway, good. It's just. We interrupt this program to bring you a special report from Stevie. Hey guys, it's Stevie from The We and Me. Thanks for joining us today. I just wanted to throw this message out to everyone in the DID community as well as the trauma and mental health community at large. What we're doing right now is looking for people within the trauma and DID community specifically who are musical. So if you have any music, whether it's just instrumental or if you got like a song that you wrote, lyrics, whatever, it doesn't have to do with mental health, that's totally fine, but we're looking for people within the mental health community and trauma community more specifically who have music that they're willing to let us use at the beginning and closing of our podcast. A big shout out to Brandon Dillon from YouTube who's let us use his music in the podcast, as well as the band Versus the Awake. If you've been listening to our podcast so far, you've heard their music already, and again, a big shout out to those guys, but we thought we'd throw out this call to the mental health community specifically to see if anyone out there had music that they'd be willing to let us use for the podcast. As always, thanks for listening. We appreciate all of our listeners, and if you'd like to be a guest of the podcast, you can reach out via Twitter at TheWeAndMe, or you can hit us up in email, theweandmeblog@gmail.com. All right, everybody. Thanks again. Talk to you later. Bye.
But the therapists, you know, and people, they really are just searching for a word to describe it.
Yeah. And I think that part of the problem is they got stuck on the wrong word.
A perpetrator, calling an altar a perpetrator is overkill.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I know a man who's in prison for the third time. He has dissociative identity disorder. He cannot receive help while he's in prison, even though it's court ordered. Illinois, you know.
Yeah.
And every time he gets out, he does something crazy. Like the last time he went to prison, it was because he took off all his clothes at University of Illinois campus in Springfield and chased a woman around naked in the snow.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. Now, looking at this, that was not an adult behavior.
No.
That was a teenager. Or maybe somebody even younger.
Yeah.
Okay? And, you know, to call a teenager or a child altar a perpetrator is stupid.
Yes. I agree. It really is. I think certain behaviors and different things like
you... Teenager, that kind of behavior would stop.
Like, right. Those meddling kids.
Yeah. Yeah, Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo was the best.
But,
go ahead.
Yeah, the altars are, they're just kids and pieces. They're not perpetrators.
No.
They don't perpetrate crimes. No. I'm not going to say nobody, because there are a few people who have DID, maybe 2%, maybe of the whole population, like there's any demographic, who will commit a serious crime.
Sure.
But that's such a small number.
Right, yeah. All people are capable of crime, but But to call, that's what some of these psychologists are defining as a type of part. It's very strange to me. So there's perpetrator parts, littles, and protector parts. They're calling them different types of parts. It's very strange to me because, no, if they're a part or an alter, you know, an alter, an other, however people want to word that, that's protective. There was a reason for it. There's a reason for the behavior. Just as there's a reason for different children who have different behaviors. Different children behave differently. There is a reason for it. Different teenagers, different adults. Everyone behaves differently. If there is a...
It's kind of a predictable path, yes.
Right, exactly, yeah. That's one of the easiest things to say in the world. People are different. But different things impact them differently. I just don't get the perpetrator thing. I don't know who started that. I have no idea in regards to, you know, psychology and DID, but I just don't get that. My guess is that it occurred because of extreme circumstances. Doctors got emotional because they felt bad for other parts within the system who were harmed. That is my bare minimum guess here, but I just see such problems with that term.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, it makes a person feel like there's something evil about them, and there's not a thing evil about it. There's nothing evil about it.
Right.
It is a normal human quality, dissociation,
right,
taken to the extreme to protect ourselves.
Yes.
And an alter who does things maybe against the law, that happened. Or, God forbid, I woke up married once. That is, you know, I've told you that.
Yeah.
You can say all you want that SJ is an evil alter that got married and when I didn't want to. No, she's not evil. She was trying to meet a need of mine. You know, she knew that I always wanted to get married, and of course that is me. I wanted to get married,
right?
Even though it was kind of off kelter, like 45 degrees, you know. But still, you can't hate. You know, it's like hating or fearing alters. Okay.
Yeah.
I understand why people do. I did too. But at the same time, now looking back, I realize they're just kids. You know, a majority of my alters are children.
Right.
Why would anybody fear a 6 or 8 year old kid?
Right.
Or hate someone who's 16?
Right.
You know, these are aliens in my brain. They. I was playing a game with my nephew the other day, and you know the game where you show the steeple and you open up your fingers, you lace your fingers together, you open your fingers, and there's all the people inside the steeple.
Yeah.
I was doing that with him, and I realized when I was doing that that it was like, wow, you know, it's like opening up your brain, and that you open up my head, you won't see all kinds of people running around. I got one brain, one personality. That's why they changed the name from multiple personality to dissociative personality.
Right.
I'm one person whose normal associative period was missed.
Right.
Around the age of 5 or 6, when your brain is supposed to associate as a part of formation of your mind. Around that age, you stop being a we, and you stop talking. My 3-year-old nephew talks to himself in the plural.
Yeah. Yeah, kids.
And that's normal. But when you get around 5 or 6 years old, you begin to be me, I.
Right.
I did that. Not that my pretend friend did that. They still don't carry on past the age of 5 or 6, but for the most part, that stops.
Right.
Because I have become me.
Yeah.
We missed that.
Yeah.
That formative stage was missed because we were too busy doing other things. We were trying to survive.
Right, yeah, that developmental piece is missed. There's a whole bunch of different developmental arenas that are, you know, typical child development, it gets interrupted.
Yes.
By severe trauma in different ways.
Yeah. And that includes your brain doesn't form correctly.
Right.
The stress hormones change your structures of your brain. And that's not just people, even current in adulthood too, with people who are like in war zones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's not, of course, that's a totally different ballgame from DID, but they're related because the brain actually changes, the structures change.
Yeah, it's wild to look at some of that. I've read some of those different articles and some of the studies. There was one that came out of, I'm not going to be able to remember right now. I want to say it was Cambridge. I know it wasn't the U.S., so I think it was Cambridge. And they were studying the brain of atypical, and then they were studying and making comparisons between people who had different degrees of trauma. So they had, like, women who had been assaulted, and then they had soldiers as well. And there were such extreme similarities with people who had trauma experiences in their life compared to an atypical brain. And even into, like, adulthood, they didn't, as far as I remember, this particular study wasn't talking about children. It was everyone. Everyone who participated was over the age of 18. The soldiers, the makeup was being changed. You did what? I'm sorry?
I brought up one of the papers I have on brain changes.
Oh, okay, cool. What? Where was it from? Just so everyone can see and tell
let's
everybody.
Let's see. The Journal of Cell Science and Therapy.
Okay. The basis of this one. What's the idea? What were they trying to discover?
They're explaining what has been found. Actually, it's bringing together the evidence that's on the internet from other papers. And the one they talk about here mentions, okay, I'm going to bring it down here, an MRI study done by Vermetten et al., Vermetten and his colleagues, comparing the brain structure of female patients diagnosed with DID with healthy subjects, and evidence for changes in the limbic system, which is, you know, your part of your brain that controls your emotions.
Right.
And your memory. The hippocampus and amygdala in DID patients were found to be remarkably smaller, 19% for the hippocampus, and 31.6% in the amygdala.
Wow.
The hippocampus controls your memory, long-term memory. Amygdala controls your emotions.
Wow.
And it was the whole reason they found even thought to do this study in the first place, these studies, was that they found it. They were studying PTSD from returning soldiers.
Okay.
And they noticed the changes. They had markedly smaller amygdala. They had changes in their amygdala and hippocampi as well. And somebody in the DID research committee thought, well, you know, I should take a look.
Right.
And
there's an idea.
Sure enough, there were brain changes. And it's not just trauma disorders, like borderline personality disorder also shows the changes.
Sure, and that makes sense, yeah, the trauma.
And borderline
disorders.
And DID are very closely related, although they're not the same disorder.
Right. Yeah, there's similar markers.
Yeah, and they also did a study, this is another study I've read, where they took actors and told them how to act as though they had alters, put them in an fMRI scanner, and didn't tell the people who were doing these tests who was who, right? They had real DID people who switched and fake actors who were acting.
Right, right.
And what they showed pictures. They didn't ask them questions or talk to them. They just showed them pictures of traumatic scenes that would set up a resonance in the brain of people who have DID compared to people who do not.
That's so interesting. I enjoy all things regarding the brain and the study of the brain.
Research material they had gathered, they discovered that the brain activity of people with DID was totally and completely different than people who were pretending to have DID.
Well, yeah, sure, of course it is.
Yeah, see, that adds to the fact of the issue that it is a real disorder.
Right.
There's so many dissenters out there that say, oh, this is a made-up disorder. It's only because it's the United States. You know, we have a fascination with civil. We have a fascination
right.
with split. And that's why people desire, for some odd reason, to have DID. Well, that may be true to some extent. Some people really don't have it and believe they do. They honestly believe they do, but they do not because they're misdiagnosed or they have fallen into the trap of, you know.
When we do the Living DID talks and then when we did the course, that's one of the doctor's concerns who participate in these things, is that concerned that they will misdiagnose somebody or that they'll create it in someone. And I'm like, okay, well, you can't create DID, first of all.
You can cause someone to believe they have it.
You can get someone to believe that they have it if you're doing a misdiagnosis. However,
sure, yeah.
If you're working in therapy, it's going to become clear that they don't. In my opinion, I don't see how someone could. I mean, Meryl Streep, who's an amazing actress and we adore her, she might be able to keep up that charade for 20 some odd years in therapy, but I can't imagine the average person can do that.
No. And that's one of the big changes, big differences.
Right, yeah. And I think, yeah, exactly. And I think that if...
That happens every 30 years, come on.
Right, that's what I'm saying. If somebody is pretending to have DID, oh my God, they need help. Please, please help that person, because if they are pretending to have this mess of a disorder...
Yeah. If there's some traumatic issues there, if they're that desperate to have, to feel special,
yeah.
Unfortunately, that's what we face a lot of times with, is that they want to feel special. Well, there's a lot of other ways to feel special besides having a disorder that can change and alter your life forever.
Yeah, and besides, oh my God, what is that? Really quick, let's interrupt this and just chat about that for a second.
Sure.
Who is pretending to have DID, and oh my God, why?
The people I have met, and this is a personal observation, I'm not a doctor, the people I have met, I believe they're borderline.
I think you could be right, yeah. I think it could be
If you study up on what borderline personality is and how closely related it is, I can see how they get crossed with borderline and the idea of very intelligent people.
Yeah.
Right? And the information is right there on the internet.
That's true.
And those, and the ACE tests and all those other tests you can do to test for DID, they're just questionnaires, self-reported questionnaires that are available on the internet.
Yeah, you know, technology just ruins everything. I mean, it's awesome to be able to talk to you, but phones have been around for a while, so I could have called you up and talked to you on the phone.
Yeah.
People don't need the radio or a podcast.
No.
I mean, radio's cool, but you know what I mean, like an internet radio type service. I can turn on my stereo, or I can jump in my Jeep and just turn on the radio.
There you go.
Technology, you're ruining everything.
This is not being recorded, is there? Are you not going to use it?
No, I'm recording, but I can stop if you want.
Yeah, there's something I wanted to tell you.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Hang on. For those who were wondering, that episode got cut off at the end because Shirley and I were talking about something more private that she didn't want to be shared. I wanted to leave that piece at the end because I want to make sure that everybody knows that if there is something that you don't want to be recorded, we're not going to do that. Consent is very important to us, as many of you know. So if there is something that you don't want shared when you come on our podcast, it will be cut out at the end of the episode, just so you know, or those pieces in the middle will be removed. And Shirley's episode is a perfect example of that. So just so you know, it was something personal that she didn't want us to share on the podcast, so we're not going to. But once again, we wanted to thank everyone for listening to the We and Me podcast, and we hope to see you in the future. We're excited to keep bringing new episodes to you. For those of you who follow us on Twitter, you may have seen us extend a call to others in the DID and dissociation, trauma, etc. community. We are looking for future guests, so if you'd like to come on and share your story, you can do so. Additionally, if you don't want your voice shared or you're uncomfortable with that, we are still producing episodes of the Living DID series on our blog. That's for people who want to share some of their story, but they don't want to do so in voice. And that's actually where the Living DID series began. So we do want to keep that continuing. And if you'd like, you can reach us at the We and Me on Twitter or the We and Me blog at gmail.com. That is where you can send comments, concerns, questions, or you can request future episodes. I know that there have been a few of you reaching out who have suggestions for episodes, and we have heard them. So stay tuned, because we are going to be continuing producing episodes of the We and Me Reads. And I know that some of you have been liking those episodes, even though I believe there's only one or two posted so far. But thank you again to everyone who shares our podcast, continues supporting us. There are other links where you can check out in the description of this episode and other episodes where you can send your donations if you want to be a part of what it is that we're doing with the Living DID hashtag, as well as the Living DID talks and our course. We have our hand in a lot of cookie jars, as some of you know. Thank you everyone once again for listening. This is Erica from the We and Me podcast and at the We and Me on Twitter. We hope you enjoy the rest of your day and have a relaxing Sunday evening. The following music you're about to hear is from Versus the Awake. The song is The Truth Is. We came across them on Twitter sometime this year, for those of you who follow us. You may have seen us tweeting with the Sarah Fader. A lot of the time when she tweets us lyrics, it's one of my parts, Melody, who participates in that because, as some of you know, she speaks lyrically. When we had found Versus the Awake on Twitter and had first listened to this song, it was just something that we thought was really powerful. Additionally, his voice is crazy. So we hope that you enjoy Versus the Awake, the song The Truth Is. Thanks again to those guys for letting us use their music. And once again, enjoy your Sunday. Bye.